everyone, and welcome to the Thriving Minds podcast. I am Professor Selena Bartlett, and today we're joined by Dr. Nora Kozlowski and Ellen Sullivan. They are the co-founders and co-CEOs of a new company called Even. This is something that everyone will want to listen to. It's for women, founded by women, and don't we need it? So thank you for joining us. Would you like to tell us and the audience a little bit about who you are and how you started Even?
Yes, we're so happy to be here, Selena. I'm Nora Kozlowski. As you said, I'm co-founder and co-CEO of Even. I'll do a quick overview of my background and then I'll hand over to, to Ellen. So I am a psychologist by background with a PhD in management, and I've always focused on how humans and technology intersect and interact. And I love bringing the best of what we do as humans, which is, you know, empathy. It's sort of progressing who we are as a civilization and bringing that together with what's possible through technology. And so the kinds of roles that I've held are most recently as Chief Learning Innovation Officer at Melbourne Business School, where together with Ellen, we created Melbourne Business School Online. So we've got really deep expertise in online learning. We created digital learning academies for some of Australia's most well-known organizations. So we're deeply passionate about what is possible through learning, but learning delivered at scale. So over to you, Ellen.
Hi, I'm Ellen Sullivan. How to describe myself, and also, you know, Nora and I are so intertwined with our corporate background over the last 5 years. So I would describe myself as a creative at heart. So I've got a design background. And the other piece I would describe myself as is a rule breaker. And so that meant within a brand like Melbourne Business School, which has got this brilliant reputation and has businesses that would come to it, we were able to create really innovative offerings for them, these you know, innovation labs, these capability academies. And so I did that over the last 5 years in a really large scale way for organizations, always through tech, always through digital, always online. So that's with brands like Google, ANZ, Defence, CSIRO. What drives me is just having this really large scale impact for learners, providing more accessibility to education and doing that with their day-to-day lives. And so that's typically work.
So let's say, how did you come up with the name Even? So for people listening, give us the punchline of what people will get by coming to you and who you're looking for.
Ellen and I both met when we were both pregnant with our second children. So we met in 2020, a few weeks before the pandemic started. And we both, from the very beginning, shared a deep understanding of the challenges that you face when you are a woman who has a senior leadership role. So both of us were managing large teams. And we both, as I said, pregnant with our second kids, and we'd had our share of whether there are health challenges. We talked before we pressed record, we talked about things like miscarriage or fertility. We'd had our fair share of those challenges. And we'd also had our fair share of being surrounded by organizations where there wasn't always a fabulous level of support for combining caring and working. So I previously, before Ellen and I met at Melbourne Business School, I'd had some experiences of being told that being pregnant was an inconvenience and things like that. So we understood that at a very sort of heart level, that it was quite difficult to not be judged for being an ambitious woman who also wanted to have a family life and who wanted to have kids and actually spend time with them. So that was sort of a shared background. But then, of course, we worked together at Melbourne Business School for 4 years. And in that time, I think we both had this drive to create and this dream that one day we would do something together that would really let us run free with our creativity. And so quite recently, our kids are now 7 and 4, mm-hmm. both of our kids, yep. So they're the same age. Really?
Our birthdays one day apart.
Yes, our birthdays they're one day apart, exactly. So a lot of commonalities. With the kids sort of being out of the that very tiny age when they need you so much, And then there were a few things that contributed as well with our networks had grown really strong. So the time was right for us to talk about, Ellen, what's your dream? Nora, what's your dream?
Yeah.
And then that's where the conversation about Even really started. And I don't know if you want to kick off with.
Well, I mean, and also how did we come up with the name?
Yeah.
Because we've had a lot of feedback so far that the one word of even full stop, and I will not compromise on the full stop. It must be, there's nothing better than even. It was actually, I think, Dale Spender, and it was a quote from her about getting even. So it was quite a rebellious quote. And we were working out, well, how can we play on that? And Dale Spender is also a very renowned feminist who's recently passed away. And so it was, well, we can't really say get even, and we don't want it to be about revenge. But actually, what do we actually want it to be for women? And really, just we won't settle for anything less. It has to be even. We're not asking for it to be more than even. It just has to be even, full stop.
Fantastic. And before we came on, I was talking about the new book called Eve by Kat Bohannon that actually looks at female body evolution from a female perspective over 200 million years. And her book's called Eve. So it seems rather appropriate that you would be wanting, it just seems that's my last podcast and this is the next one. So I'm thinking something's happening here.
Eve and Eve, how beautiful.
And I have to say that I love the name, I love the branding, I love all of it, and it's so necessary. And what you're describing is something that I encountered in 1990s when I was a young postdoc at ANU. And it's exactly the same situation I found myself in where, the only two women that were kind of senior professors at ANU at John Curtin School where I was doing my neuroscience training had either learned to play golf or decided not to have children. And that was the message that was being delivered.
Yeah.
And to me, it was like, when I get the opportunity, I'm going to make sure I dress exactly as I dress, have children like everyone else here seems to be able to have children that aren't female, and demonstrate that we can do that together. Because if young females don't have the same role models, then they think that that's what they've got to do to be successful and ambitious. And I think that's so wrong.
Yeah. I mean, exactly right. Yeah. So that's sort of the premise underlying even as well, as we don't think we need to be honorary men, and it's the women are not the problem. Even is actually about how can we make work on our terms? How can we make careers work on our terms? We don't have to, like you said, dress like men. We don't have to play golf just to be like men. We can be women. And that's something to be proud of.
Yeah. And that comes through role modeling as well, doesn't it? So as the more we have, the more easy it gets as well. And one thing that I'm learning as a professor at QUT, I do a lot of mentoring of academic women in what I call the Valley of Death. Yeah. So it's exactly this place that you're describing, and I'm sure it exists in corporations even more so. And the Valley of Death exists in my field, where you get your PhD, all good, then you have a postdoc or whatever, and then you're trying to get that secure financial position, and that's timing with having children.
Yeah.
And so this, what I did is I just nutted it out like a crazy person, because I am.
Wow.
And I just wrote 10 papers before I had my children to cover having children, because in my day you weren't allowed to have children at all. You had to pretend you never had kids, which is probably what you're talking about. And so what we're trying to do now at QUT and other places is, how do we mentor young women to not go into the Valley of Death, because they think they can't do it, because they don't, men don't ask for help.
Which
is probably what this is about too. Am I correct?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, this is what we're trying to do with Even. We are trying to create with Even that any woman can come into the platform, and they can see who they could be. They could see their role model. It's not going to be just me and Nora as the role models. It's representative of the women population out there right now. Can they see where they could be? Can they see what career change they might want to take? Can they see someone who's like killing it in AI, and that they want to be able to do that too? And you know, we've experienced that. We've lived this where, you know, female role models that you look up to are just so important for your career, so important as a woman. So how can we magnify that? How can we scale that? And how can we do that in with business?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so just to build on that, also, as we were coming up with, even in the concept, as Ellen said, we really wanted women to be able to see role models who looked like them, who were accessible, who were not scary or super polished or perfect, because there's no such thing. And we also really wanted to tackle the issue of female representation in the workforce. So the more we started looking into, you know, this problem that we had experienced very personally, we started to look at the research around it and some of the statistics around female participation in the workforce. And we were shocked to find that Australia, despite the fact that, you know, we're a very wealthy country, women are actually more educated than men. But then when you look at participation, it turns out only 62% of working age women actually participate economically,
which is not even.
It's not even, and it's so for men it's over 70%. So that's, it's not right to us. And then of course, as our kids are now 7 and 4, we're starting to have conversations with other school parents, and there we're seeing many parents who made choices when kids were born around stepping back or compromising. And often these decisions were made with imperfect information about the long term. And so they would step back thinking you can just re-enter, but actually then re-entry into the workforce is phenomenally difficult because your skills are undervalued as a parent.
And
you're out of date. Exactly.
Yep.
Out of date. And then it just there are issues around confidence. And so it just gets very tricky. And then the practical matters around, is it financially worth me actually re-entering the workforce with the cost of childcare? So we really wanted to think about positioning even as something that solves the female participation rate in the workforce in Australia.
Because the economic impact is huge. It's like,
crazy.
I think it's $128 billion for Australia alone. In an economic that could be gained if we actually enabled women to engage in the workforce in ways that was flexible enough for them. And I mean, that was from the Women's Task Force recently.
Yeah.
So that's a recent stat. So why are we missing out on that productivity as a country?
On this subject, this subject is dear to my heart. And let's tackle it big time. And financial independence, financial insecurity and financial difference for my generation of women, because I just turned 59. So let's talk about that, because I remember as a 10-year-old, my mother said to me, because she was at her generation, weren't really allowed to work that much. She was able to because my dad had a pharmacy, small country town, so she snuck in there because she didn't want to be at home necessarily. But she used to tell me all the time when I was 10, I was the eldest, my job, Selena, is to make you financially independent. And,
wow.
And I was 10 and I was making
That's
the bed with
brilliant.
Her. And I never really, it only really sunk in later in life that how important that is, because for so many reasons. So we now have women in their 50s going into tiny houses or not having any housing security because their superannuation, because of all these choices that we're making.
Yeah.
We think we're sacrificing in the essence of our family. But what happens is that no one cares. Like, so
yeah.
By the time you've made all those sacrifices and everyone else has done really well financially, you're just left out to dry, to be really frank. I'm putting it right out there as the true stories
yeah.
of what women
Fantastic.
Are facing.
Keep going.
Yeah,
you were so lucky to have had a mum who actually emphasized the message around financial independence, because I think it's not common to be
yeah.
taught around
no,
the importance of being financially secure.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And many women that I'm working with here up in Queensland, which is still a little bit behind, shall we say, I got to go overseas and lots of other lucky things happened. But it's a country town in some sense. It's great in many others, and it's becoming more diverse and everything. But women still have a princess story in
yeah.
some sense, that they're sold when they're children, that someone will look after them. And that's just not true at all. And
this is like a big part of what Even is about. So whilst this is about providing, you know, career skills and leadership skills, and, you know, you can also tap into AI and data skills and product and growth, the fundamental base of the skills that we are also providing, or I guess these aren't more skills, but it's more insights and knowledge that people need, is wealth, wealth generation, how to invest, how to be financially fluent, how to, you know, set a goal to have your own house in a few years' time, and how do you plan for that? So that's a key part of this. And then the other aspect is also the juggle. So equality at home, the juggle of potentially having pain whilst you're at work, something which I've definitely experienced personally. So it's a very holistic idea of what a kind of career platform could be for women, not just kind of targeting tech. It's really thinking about everything a woman may need.
Yeah, that's it, the time has come and it's so desperately needed. And I have many young women I'm mentoring right now that I would love to, and I even said to my daughter, who's at university, and I said, oh, I'm interviewing these two women doing a start-off, and you're definitely going to be part of that at some point. You need to be going to their website and learning about this as well. It's so needed, these conversations, these difficult conversations that in general, women just don't have with each other. They talk about all sorts of other things, but they really don't talk about these really important, really foundational, the basis of security in your life, in my opinion.
And I think, as Ellen said, I think it's also so important that, you know, many of us now, schools, universities, they do teach us how to be skillful at our work, but it's not the entire equation. So you can't actually participate fully at work if you're constantly worried about your financial security, or as Ellen said, if you're constantly suffering but you actually don't find it safe to talk to your employer about women's health issues. So it really I think for women to be able to participate fully, you need to tackle the problem of participation holistically, so through health, through wealth, through skills, through what does it mean to juggle? What does it mean to have a conversation with your employer about flexible working arrangements? But it really has to be holistic.
Yes, and I talk a lot about part-time too. I really don't like part-time. I think part-time is a missell on women because they always end up working full-time and not get paid. So they're working part-time.
Yeah, the second shift.
Yeah.
And even at work, I think they should get fully paid while they're creating really healthy children, and they should have flexible work arrangements during that period of time, because the more kids have parents in their life, the healthier they are. It reduces huge economic burden on our society, because that really matters, and no one can really substitute for that in some way. But I think
that's right.
I say this to my young women that I'm trying to get through the valley of death, because they've got little kids and they're trying to publish and get their PhDs and teach, and you know, it's crazy amount of stuff in that age group, and it's about survival, isn't it? And I'm saying to them, you are not to go part-time. Please do not go part-time. That is a furphy, because you lose out on superannuation. You're still going to do full-time plus work. You're doing all the work of everyone else anyway. You may as well get paid for it.
Yeah.
And this is the type of knowledge that and insight we want so many women to have, that when you are making these big choices, and they're big choice moments for women. It feels like it's an in the moment decision sometimes, or you feel like you want more evidence or you want more insight. And our aspiration is that we can offer that. So even decision making tools. At different points in your career, can you actually use data and insights to inform your decision?
Yeah, because that's what we wanted. So like the women that you're talking about, you know, should I go part-time? We've worked part-time at different points in our lives. And, you know, I would have loved to have known at that point, what would be the impact on my career in 5 years? What would be the impact on my super? And same as, you know, decisions like, should I have a child? Should I have a second child? What would be the impact of that on the different aspects of my life that matter, like my career, my relationship, my financial health? We would love, I mean, of course, we're very early stage with Even, but we would love for that to be one of the services that we can provide on our platform, is that decision-making support. Because we definitely want to say to women that you're not the only ones making that decision, and you don't have to carry that by yourself either. And you shouldn't have to carry the burden of the outcomes of that decision. It should be something that is shared in a relationship.
Yes, and having these calculators would be so handy, wouldn't it, to be able to see the extent, the impact. I mean, the beauty of why money harping on this is because I think it's a big one, because financial independence and security gives you so much freedom in so many directions and would reduce the burden of domestic violence and all sorts of other things, in my opinion, if women earned the same and had the same financial independence across their whole lifespan. And also for their children to see that that's the case. And it does brings confidence. And so I don't like to focus on money per se. I don't believe in having lots of money. I'm just saying, like, for basic shelter, food, and decision making about what you want to do with your kids. I think that's just a huge one that people don't factor in at all in these decisions. I certainly didn't, just saying. But having those calculators to see that there are impacts that are really, really long term that you can't see into your 50s and 60s, what they might look like, it would be really valuable resource for people to be able to tap into. I want to touch on another subject. I know these are questions I didn't ask you, but a woman said to me once, a professor at UC Berkeley, and I was a professor running a lab at University of California, San Francisco. I had little kids and I was screaming around the streets through stop signs and throwing cereal boxes down and running late for every meeting and having people tell me I needed to get another car and wasn't allowed to leave at a certain time and all of that. And then she had a husband that was doing everything for, like, looking after kids and stuff, and she looked at me one day over drinks and said to me, "Selena, there is nothing I'd change in this world until men are doing more at home." And it never even occurred, this is like a long time ago, she said this to me, and it never really occurred to me that that would be the thing that would need to really change, because we're always focusing on stuff at work and making things more flexible. So I'm interested to know, are you helping women have these conversations or understand that's a reality that we need to face?
And so there is also a lot of men out there who want to start taking this more equitable role at home. I've got personal experience. I had my husband, he did take 6 years out of work himself to be the primary carer within our relationship. And whilst he was patted on the back every single day for doing that role, it was still interesting to see how it was challenging for him. People would still call me when he would drop them off at kinder. And so it's just every aspect of what we do with kids and how that caring relationship is set up, it just needs to be more even. So in our we definitely have a specific area of even focused on that juggle, and so we also have experts coming in who are talking about what that mental load feels like when the juggle is occurring, how to have that conversation about more equality at home. What could it look like? You're just getting really practical about it as well, not staying too lofty around just the problems, but also just some practical ideas. What could be, they have a masterclass and there's a takeaway. And the takeaway might be the three stats that prove to their partner at home why they need to change and what benefits that could be for the family.
I'd like to add in, we talked about financial calculators, but health is a huge loss that happens over time too by thinking that you're a superwoman. I can speak to that because I thought I was a superwoman and then I wasn't anymore. And I was I was really unwell by the end of that time of doing, juggling those plates and spinning them. Like, I had 10 of them spinning in the air, and when it came down, it was really serious. So there is a cost that's on your health, even if you think you're a superwoman, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're not, you're just a little human.
Cost.
It's not just to you, Selena. It's also, I think, the organizational cost to that as well. So for us, what's really important with Even as a platform is that, as Ellen said, we give concrete tools to women about, you know, this is the conversation that you can have. But it's also, you know, Even is a solution for employers. And so we want to raise topics like women's health and understand what are the impacts of not creating an environment that's good for women's health. What's the impact to your productivity? What's the impact to your bottom line? Because we know that women are actually 70% of women. I think there was a study released yesterday, 70% of women report feeling stressed much of the time or all of the time, more so than men. Women are more likely to suffer from chronic illness and disease. And women are more likely, as Ellen said, to suffer from pain, which of course impacts your ability to work and to participate. So it's really important for us to have a lot of content, education, knowledge, and again, role models who can tell the stories about women's health in the platform and to make sure that that topic just is raised to the surface. Because quite often as women, you know, we can sort of shove it down and pretend it's not happening, but it's always there under the surface. So, you know, we get our periods, women go through menopause, women, you get pregnant and you sort of just carry on and pretend, like you said, pretend you're superwoman. But I actually think there's a sort of turning tide now, and we're not, you know, we can't be expected, the generation that's coming up now, we're not expecting to stay quiet about it anymore.
No.
So we want to be part of, raising the, raising our voices and raising the topics that matter.
And Marcia Devlin's book, Beating the Odds, you're reminding me of that too. And I just kill myself laughing through that whole book. And it was my whole life, bro-propriation, mansplaining. Everything she talked about in that book was my lived, and it still is, by the way. It still happens where people ask me to make them a cup of coffee and tea because I chose not to keep wearing my suit, my black suit with my vest. I used to have a uniform when I was running my lab in America so I could make it. I was, you know, trying to make it. And then when I came back to Australia, I decided, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. I don't feel comfortable. It's not who I am.
Yeah.
But then you face some consequences for that too. So I think that's, you know, helping women speak up, not letting someone take over their ideas because we're so respectful that we let them.
Yeah.
Because you know what I mean? Like it's so, we're not as confident, I guess.
Yeah.
Or well.
And it's ingrained. Yeah. I can see it's happening very early on as well. I noticed last week, my older daughter, who's 7, I noticed that she started to apologize a lot, even for things that she wasn't responsible for. And so straight away, my husband and I had to have a conversation with her about, you know, why do you feel the need to apologize? And how do you sort of, you know, how do you step out into the world? And, but it, you can just see that it's not something that happens, you know, once you work in a lab, it's something that happens from kindergarten, that women are sort of raised with different expectations of being, you know, more submissive, quiet, polite, good girls, nice. And you know, even when you parent very consciously, it still creeps in. So we definitely, there's just so much to be done.
Yeah, and I found it really interesting just watching how when you let a girl be who they are, how much derision you get around that with even within your own family. So if you have a really out there young girl who's just wanting to be herself, highly spirited, just independent in thinking and not just being the good girl, doing the right thing, being nice, being quiet, sitting down, doing as they're told, you get a lot of feedback as a parent about that from within your own family particularly. And fortunately, I had a school situation that was okay with that, but just across, people like kids that are quiet and do what they're told, to be really frank. So when you have these highly spirited, young, independent people that are probably going to change the world, people don't like that in the young age. They like them to be really well behaved. So I think some of that starts there too, doesn't it?
I mean, it plays out throughout our whole lives. And I think this is why I enjoy being a co-founder. I've never felt more free to be more rebellious, to actually go for what we want, because I have a co-founder who I can test ideas out with and go, I know this is a bit out there. No, this is a bit crazy. Is it too crazy? And obviously Nora will go, absolutely not. don't think that. But we do the same for each other.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's why, I really do believe that Even has this potential to do something at quite a large scale because we're doing it together. I don't think I could do this journey by myself. I would love to feel confident enough to do it by myself. But realistically as well, with two kids and a mortgage to pay, I don't think that's going to be possible. But doing it with a co-founder,
isn't it? It's much more fun.
Yeah.
Much more
fun. And being able to do it with a woman who has a very similar lived experience means that it feels like we can be more ambitious.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested because you've saw the statistics on VC funding for startups, for women funded startups. So let's hope that you can make that more even as well. It's really outrageously small percentage of funding goes to female founders.
Yeah, there's a lot of work happening in that space. And I do think I can see really positive intention about changing the capital that does flow to female founded businesses. And I think it's partly, it's a question of who makes the decision about funding. It's a question of who understands the problem spaces, that startups are building in. And of course, and we're actually the same, women often understand women's problems better. So you need venture capital. You need firms that actually have female partners who understand those spaces as well. And that still has to change in order to get more funding to female founded businesses. We've had so much support, and not just from other female founders or women or female executives, but actually we've had incredible support from both genders, because as Ellen said, men also want to participate in work differently. Mm-hmm. So it's just been such a privilege since we launched, and even before we were having some conversations with potential buyers, with investors, with advocates and advisors, and the response has truly been overwhelming.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good to hear. So someone listening that might be running a company or a business or an organization, what would you say to them? How can they reach you, and what would they have? I guess that's the best question.
Sure. Well, firstly, they can reach us at hello@even-careers.com. Business is actually becoming quite well-versed in how Getting Even can solve a lot of their business goals, but the problem itself can seem quite hard to do within an organization. So something like Even really helps them gain the productivity their business needs, whilst at the same time helping women build the careers that they want. So we're saying you can do both. It's not either or. It would clearly help with attraction and retention and engagement of their female workforce as well. And then it's that problem that we hear about time and time again about strengthening that leadership pipeline that doesn't have enough high potential women coming in, or it might have enough coming in and then for some reason they disappear and only a few get through to that senior executive level. So that is what Even can do at a very, very high level. But then in the practical sense, what Even is about is actually providing a year's worth of support to every woman that's enrolled within the platform. And so that's through a number of different offerings within the platform. So it's not a two-day program. It's not a conference. There is support throughout a year for a woman, whether they're looking to upskill, whether they're looking to gain that next promotion, whether they're looking to return to work. There are a number of different challenges, and it's really support that would make an impact to that woman's career.
Yeah. So if you're an individual listening to the conversation and you really want to get onto the Even platform, the best thing to do is to make sure that your employer speaks to us.
Yeah.
So the employer is the that's the customer who signs up for us, but the person who's on the platform who reaps a lot of the benefits is the woman. So it's really designed for women. And of course, as Ellen said, both women and employers win. They both thrive through Even. But yeah, definitely send your leader, whether it's your, you know, your executives or depending on where in the organization decisions are made about career support and learning and development, you can also send us to your HR learning and development team. So send them even-careers.com. Send them to Ellen and myself, to our LinkedIn profiles. So Dr. Nora Koslovsky or Ellen Sullivan on LinkedIn, and you can find us there. So we're currently speaking to a lot of organizations who are expressing interest for our MVP, which hopefully goes live in July. But if you'd like, if you're an individual and you would like your organization to be on that list, then definitely send them to us, please.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I'll put links everywhere for you.
Thank you. And our aspiration is, could we get 100,000 women through Even within the next 5 years? Could we do that? We think you can.
Yes, you can.
We think it can be done. But that's our target.
Yeah.
So as we head to the close, can you, each of you, for people listening, offer one piece of advice that has allowed you to stay one working and doing what you're doing? How did you get through the valley of death? What's one piece of advice that you'd like to offer?
Yeah. Does it have to be one? So I think for me, community is really important. It's the foundation on which Even is built, but it's also the foundation upon which I've been able to have a career, be an executive, have two kids, have a marriage. You have to surround yourself with people who believe in you, people who will pick up the phone on the days when you're feeling absolutely terrible, you're feeling, you know, parenting guilt, you're feeling you're not thriving. You need people who will tell you that you can keep going. So community is just so important, but then it's also about at the right time. So the thing that's really helped me to keep going is at the right time, having investment in me, whether that's through education that came just at the right time. So a bit of education on finance here, bit of education on AI there, bit of whatever I needed for, you know, career upskilling has to come at the right time. And then investment and sponsorship by leaders who have to believe in you as well. So there's so much required, but yeah, I think the most important thing really would be for me is community.
For me, what's kept me going? Well, personally, what always keeps me going is not taking myself too seriously and keeping the humor. So I'm a big pop culture fan, a big comedy fan. And so I have a very dark sense of humor, and that definitely, and I have friends and family who have a dark sense of humor as well. So that's personally what makes me laugh at sometimes, that those insane moments that you experience a lot of as a woman who's trying to do something differently or lead in a different space. You have to be able to laugh at yourself and laugh at the situation. But then the other piece that's kind of kept me going is finding where I can have autonomy, where I can be in control. And so working with Nora, who used to be my manager, I did gain a lot of autonomy within my career. But then also I've fought for that autonomy as well within my personal life.
Yeah.
So it's finding those spaces where you can have the control that means you're in charge of your life.
And for me personally, it was standing in front of a washing machine with 8 loads of washing just completed and having to be put away and thinking, oh, my God, this is ridiculously hard. But then the only thing I could do is think about my daughter and all those moments when I was in auditoriums with only 2 women above me and making different choices. And I'm like, and at, during the, there was times where people were starting to go back to home and stop working because of, you know, you probably don't remember that, but there was a period of time where we were losing some of the gains we'd made for over a few decades, where women are thinking, oh, this is way too hard, I'm just going to go back. For me, that was what kept me going and still does today. Is knowing that people mimic what we do and look at what we are. And if we want to make a difference for women in professions and science in general, we have to stay authentic to who we are, be a woman who you want to be, and let, and so the other younger ones can see there's opportunities for them too, no matter who they are or how they want to live their life. They can also have a family if they want to or not, or dress the way they want to or not, but still be taken seriously in leadership and science. I think that's the goal, isn't it, that we're working towards?
Yeah.
So Nora and Ellen, thank you so much for creating Even for generations of women to come. It's something that's really desperately needed. Obviously, that's why you're getting so much welcome feedback. I don't think there's anything like it on the market that's holistic. And I hope you stay true to that. And I'm sure you're going to be really successful. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. And
thank you for
offering
having us
all hope.
Thank you, Selena.
Selena, this hope thing does come up. So we hope to live up to it.
Yes, thank you.